Hey, McCartney fans, welcome to episode 148 of Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. I can't believe we're almost to 150, Andy. This is getting crazy. Almost. I mean, it's just, yeah. But anyways, we are a Paul McCartney talk show mainly dealing with the solo career of Paul McCartney. I'm one of your two co-hosts, Tom Hunyadi, and you may know me from my other show, Talk More Talk, a solo Beatles video cast where myself and my three co-hosts talk all things solo Beatles and some Beatles from time to time. And I'm joined by my partner in crime, my backwards traveler, Andy Nichols. Andy, what's going on, my friend?
Yeah, well, it's only natural to talk Beatles. I mean, there's just a little bit of a film coming out in a couple of days.
Right, just a little
bit. Just a small film that you might have to just talk about a little bit.
Just a little bit. We might actually be going live after each episode, too, right?
I heard a podcast that might be doing that. I'm doing well, Tom. Thanks for having me on, and welcome to have our guest here to talk Women and Wives again.
Yes, absolutely. This is part two of our series called Women and Wives, and I am super excited to have back Natalia Cardenas once again to help us with this episode, because she is the host of the wonderful podcast called She Loves You, and she just dropped a new episode, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. But Natalia, how are you?
I'm doing good, guys. Thanks for having me again. I'm so excited.
Yes. But yeah, it's a great time. We're going to talk about four women on this episode, and you know, some good, some bad, but but before we get to that, Andy, last night, when this is going to get posted, what, on the 27th? But today is what, the 21st or 22nd?
Yeah,
21st. So the 20th, last night, you saw Bob Dylan.
I did. I got to see Bob Dylan in New York last night at the Beacon Theater. He's doing three nights there. And I saw him in 2019, and he played for an hour and 45 minutes. He's 80 years old. He did 17 or 18 songs. And his voice sounded better this time than it did in 2019. It was great. He played a lot of material from his new album, Rough and Rowdy Ways. And it was great. You know, a lot of people go to the show and they want to hear like the hits. And I'm like, look, this isn't McCartney or Elton John.
I was about to ask, does he do any oldies? But I doubt it. Yeah,
he does a couple oldies, but he doesn't do them in the way that you know them. You know, his songs now have kind of like a jazzy, bluesy feel to them. So he played a couple of like classics, but they were played in that arrangement. It was awesome. I've seen him twice now, and it was just awesome to see an icon in his roots kind of back in New York. It was
definitely
great. You're
a fan of that new album, right?
Very much so. Yeah, I think the new album is incredible, and it was just a joy to, again, I've been back to a couple concerts now post-COVID. That was the first big name act, though, where everybody kind of went, no masks. Right. I mean, it was great. It was almost like, wow, this is how it was to go back. So it was great to go see him again. And yeah, life is moving on, and Bob is still with us and going strong.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. It's just amazing that a lot of these acts are still going. Yeah. And they're still playing by their rules. I mean, Dylan has never been one to, play all the hits, you know, to the crowd. I mean, he does things his way. You know, Neil Young, in a way, is a lot like that, too. I mean, there's times where he'll do a set, and he'll just maybe play one or two songs that people know.
Right.
And that's it, you know. So.
Unlike our boy, who plays what
well, caters, yeah. Yeah, he caters to the
three
fans.
Hours, all yeah.
the Yes.
All that
Elton, Billy, they give the people what they want, and that's just a different kind of entertainer. So
absolutely. And now you also got something in the mail from the UK, right?
I did. I got the UK version of the lyrics, which is I'm gonna keep sealed. This is such a better cover than that green. Oh my god,
yeah. So much nicer.
This is okay, but it's like you know,
it's so bland. I don't know what it is. Like, I'm gonna be honest. I'm an English major, and like I the publishing company itself, they are just terrible with American covers. I don't know why American covers.
Why? Good point.
I don't know why. Like, I have every book I get, you know, I buy it and I'm like, oh, this is a cool cover. And then I see the UK cover.
UK cover, and it's 10 times
and
better.
It's way better.
England's doing something right always.
But it was on 10. It was not. It was. I think it, the U.S. version was like $60, and this was only about 80 from the UK. So it wasn't like an astronomical difference in price to get a far better cover. So this out go on the shelf and stay sealed.
Right. So the only difference on from that one, besides the covers, you don't get the McCartney profile.
Yeah. On the books.
On the book. You know, on the spine. Books.
Yeah, on the spine. You don't get the face there from the RAM sessions on there. But yeah, a nice package.
Oh, cool. So excellent. Yeah. You know, myself yesterday, I hit the record store and you know, Andy,
I don't believe
you know, from being here, you I mean, you've seen just a taste of the record stores that we have out here in Arizona, but I went to a particular one and
one that you brought me to or no, or another one.
I think I took it. It's called Record High. Maybe we took you there. I think I did, but the, you know, McCartney 2 was the only archive on vinyl that I didn't have yet. It came out in 2011. I wasn't collecting vinyl at that time. So you can see it right behind me. I kind of spun it yesterday and it sounded great. So I found that there. And I found a bunch of 12-inch singles, which I was looking for. And I got the Hope of Deliverance and Deliverance. These were the remixes, the Steve Anderson remixes. So you got that. Then you got the this version of Figure of Eight.
What's the B-side? Another version.
Yeah,
of that?
but those are on side one. On the other side is an etching.
So okay, right.
Yeah, so you can see right there on the etched disc. Yeah, yep. And then you got the you know, the Ebony and Ivory 12-inch as well. Now this has on the B side, it has Rain Clouds, and it has the solo version of Ebony and Ivory on there with obviously just Paul. Doing that, and then the big daddy, one that I finally got. See, this was the last thing I needed on physical, on any physical format, and this is called Twin Freaks.
Baby,
this was 2003.
Five,
was it five or three?
I don't think it was five or maybe four.
Yeah, my bad. Yeah, it's 2005, yeah. And this was the last thing I needed on a physical format, so very, very excited because I think it was only pressed on CD for as a promo. To be dished out to radios or whatever, but yeah, only vinyl for the most part. I'm super excited to have that. We'll be...
No,
I haven't opened it yet. But super excited about you know, doing a show on that in January with the great Kid O'Toole. So that'll be that'll be great. Yeah. So, are you a collector in any way, Natalia?
I mean, I do have vinyl. I have a mix of the vinyl you can get at Target, and then I actually have real, vintage,
authentic vinyl.
Vintage. I shouldn't even say that. It's authentic. Yes. Right. I got a Fleetwood Mac Rumors album.
You and everybody else.
Yeah, I know, but I was so lucky that I hadn't found it yet. I didn't want to get one that you could get at Target. I wanted a real physical, authentic.
Gotcha.
One. And then I happened to go to the record store that I always go to, and they never had it. And then they just got it in. He was
nice.
It's a first pressing, which is really cool. So take it. Right. And I was like, thank you. So I was very happy with that. But yes, I do. Excellent. Do vinyl. I do a little bit of photography myself, as a hobby. So I'm trying to collect old cameras. I just got an Argo Flex, one of those TLR ones, the ones that are that. So I'm really happy. Yeah. So I'm really happy about that. But I collect, so vinyl and old cameras, but I love anything vintage. And
as a younger buyer, do you like the fact that Target and Walmart sell vinyl now? Or are you
I don't necessarily mind it if it gets people into getting the real stuff. You know what I mean?
Right.
Okay, I have this, but what does it mean to actually go to a record store and find the authentic?
Exactly.
Because I don't necessarily mind it, really.
It seems very here's 50 records to sell, that we have, but it's not going to a proper record store.
Yeah, and that's kind of my thing, why I don't particularly buy the Target ones, because I know it's not... It was made now. And that's not a problem necessarily, but I find that a lot of the times kids are like, oh my gosh, I have a record. And
I have a record, yeah.
But it doesn't necessarily mean it's a real, it is real, but it's not real.
Right.
I'm with you.
But I don't object because it does get kids into getting the real thing.
Records, yeah. Do you have a decent amount of record stores by you?
Oh, I was going to say records. Yeah, I do. But record stores, yes. So there's a place, I'm in Orange County, so there's a place called Old Town Orange, which is sort of like, it takes you back, really. Like, it looks like an old town out of, you know, like the 60s and whatever in the 50s, and it's great. But they have a lot of, like, antique stores there, and sort of like these just old shops that you can like find the random things, but you're like, oh, this is cool. But they have a great record store there. They used to have a record store like 20 minutes from me. It was called Pepperland. It was a Beatles record store, which I was obsessed with, and that's it's where I got a lot of like my really good old, you know, authentic records. And the guy was so nice. He would give me free ones sometimes just because I was like such a loyal customer. And
I actually think I went to that record store because I have a cousin who lives in Orange County. Was Pepperland that record store in a strip mall?
Yeah, kind of like a strip mall, just kind of like a
By itself. Because I have a cousin in Orange County, and I visited him years ago, and he took me to Pepperland, and I bought a couple records there.
Wasn't it great? It was such a great store, and unfortunately, It closed down. I'm not sure if it was the pandemic or before then, but I think there was just no money anymore, and the owner was trying to kind of like save it, and I think there was like a campaign, but it fell through, and now it's an ice cream parlor, which really messes me up because that was like my favorite store. There's also just like a little mall near the big department store mall that we have, but there's like a little mall kind of next to it, and it's sort of like a vegan type like hippie mall. It's very like you know what I mean. It's very like, ooh, you know, we're about you know, organic products, but they have this little sort of like not a trailer, but it's sort of like a little mobile home, but it's like the like small version of that, and it's just records. It's this guy that just sells a bunch of records, and I love it because he has like cassettes too, and he has like these singles, and the singles are the best pile though, in my opinion, because you find these like goodies. Like I found a Sun record and a Carl Perkins. I found like a Carl Perkins, like fifth, like a 75. It was just, you find a lot of goodies. So those are kind of my main places.
Right.
More record stores though. I think you got to like go a little farther, kind of like.
Right. How far are you from, how far are you from Amoeba?
Records? Amoeba, it depends with traffic. I'm without traffic, it'll be like 50 minutes. With traffic, an hour, 20. So not too bad. Like I can get there. Amoeba's great though. I would say it's my favorite, but it's too far from me, so I can't really drive all the way. But it's great.
The problem with Amoeba is, you know, people know they price things accordingly. You know, they know what they have.
You can't get away with saying, "Oh, it's just some record."
You're not gonna walk in and see a first pressing, like a Ringo's record from the early 2000s, and not have to pay, you know, like $100 for it. They know what they have for sure.
And they're also kind of on the bandwagon of, here's, you know, records that are new, like, you know, you know, not really authentic ones, which vintage. They have authentic ones, but it's just they also vintage, so
yeah,
I think they're becoming a little commercial in my opinion, and that's fine. Like, they've always been commercial, but in a, I don't know, like now it's everybody knows Amoeba.
It's not a hidden secret anymore. It's not a hidden secret anymore. Exactly. Yeah.
It used to be, but no.
Right. Very good. Okay. Well, let's get started with part two here of our Women and Wives episode. And we left off right around 68. And we left off without mentioning a person that we should have. We probably could have ended it, but I think this might be a good way to start this episode.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in a way, when you think of Peggy Lipton, who we're going to be talking about here, when you hear about the relationship, it doesn't seem like it was like an actual boyfriend-girlfriend relationship. This is more like I'm California, let's hook up relationship.
Yeah, it was like a on and off, like, hey, I'm in town, let's see each other thing. They had met in 1964 when the Beatles were in LA during the sort of like US tour, and it was at that like garden party they attended. Yes. Like, I don't remember. Yep. And she was there because I think anyone was there. And she was a teen herself at that point.
19.
So, of course, she was a Beatles fan. And Paul took notice of her. Of course he would, because she's gorgeous. If you've seen pictures, she was a very beautiful woman. But, yeah, and they just met. And it was like, you know, they got on really well. And they hooked up, I think, during that time as well. But it was like an on and off sort of I'm in town, see me type thing. Yeah.
Right. And then again next year as well, the following year, I should say 65.
Yeah, the following year.
Again, I think I read that Lennon kind of made fun of Paul because he took her out to dinner first before the hookup.
I did not know that, did he? Yeah. I mean, of course. Right.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's what they do. You know, they tease each other about things like that, you know.
Yeah.
But the part I really did find interesting was, again, in 68, when, you know, Paul does call her to try to arrange a meeting, mm-hmm. and then she goes to where he's staying, but unfortunately for her, Linda's now in the picture.
Yeah, so it's kind of like her dreams were shattered a little bit. it's just like, it must have hurt, not hurt, but she definitely must have been like, oh, okay, so I guess you're done with me.
But again, though, there wasn't really a lot there to really warrant any kind of affection, really.
Yeah, I think he just found her interesting, obviously, and you know, you're young, why not? You know, type thing.
Rebound after
a way. And it's like she was very famous herself with the Mod Squad, you know, that was becoming a really big thing. You know, like she probably didn't even have time to date Paul McCartney, even if she had wanted to, you know, like she's so busy with her acting career, you know, which is kind of like a trend. Paul seems to like actresses a lot, but
yeah, you know, and people might not know she was also a star in Twin Peaks too. They're in the late 80s, early 90s, which, you know, if you haven't seen Twin Peaks, please watch Twin Peaks.
I need to.
Yeah, it's definitely worth the watch, especially that first season. But then she does well. I mean, hey, she does well for herself. I mean, anytime you marry a Quincy Jones, I mean,
he did well. That's just saying that.
No, the Quincy Jones who said the Beatles were overrated. Oh, that Quincy Jones.
Yeah, that Quincy Jones. Yes,
I wonder if he ever, like, how he felt about that, like knowing his wife, like, you know, dated or I guess was with Paul McCartney. I always like imagine.
Well, that's the thing, though. I mean, they could have found out because then in 81, while working on The Girl Is Mine, they do meet up again, which, you know, I wonder was kind of awkward.
What brought that upon? How did they meet again while working with
Because Quincy Jones is the producer, and she's still married with Quincy at that time.
Okay.
So funny.
Exactly.
Did she stay married to Quincy Jones for like till she passed away, or they got divorced?
No, I think they did. They had divorced in the 80s at some point. Maybe 90s. They weren't together by the time she passed in May of 2019.
And then
she even babysat the McCartney children from my research while they went out, I read that, you know, Linda was like, well, no hard feelings or anything like that, you know, so keep it simple, you know. But again, you know, you're married to Quincy Jones, so, you know, life isn't that bad. So that pretty much ended Peggy Limpton there, and then in 68. So, but listen, the main relationship, Linda Eastman. You know, obviously we talked about their meeting in the last episode, meeting at the Bag of Nails, and just how their relationship has grown from there.
Did they meet at the Bag of Nails first, or was she invited to the Sgt. Pepper press release to take the photos?
They met at the Bag of Nails first. Right. So she had come to London because a book was being published called Rock, Another Four-Letter Word. And they asked Linda to do photographs of rock stars, you know, everywhere from San Francisco to New York to London. And actually, she was not even asked to photograph the Beatles on that London trip, but she knew, she's like, I have to photograph the Beatles. I mean, I'm in London. How could I not photograph the Beatles? So she took it upon herself, and she went to Brian Epstein's office at the time, which was kind of like the pre-Apple headquarters, I guess you could say. But she went and, you know, she went to the secretary and was like, you know, I'm a photographer. My name's Linda Eastman. Here's my portfolio. I would love to photograph the Beatles, you know, like, you know, please get this to Brian Epstein because, you know, I know he's their manager. I would really love this opportunity. The lady, right. The secretary said, of course, yeah, we'll call you in like 2 days. So right. She waits and she gets an immediate response. And, you know, the secretary is like, Brian loved your photograph of Keith Moon and he wants to buy it. And of course you can photograph the Beatles. You can come over to the Sgt. Pepper launch party that we're having. It's going to be great.
Brian's like, house. Right. Yeah.
So, but before that she went to the Bag and Nails Club with the animals because she was really good friends with the animals, especially Eric Burden. She was really good friends with him. And it just happened. They met, right. You know, even before, you know, technically meeting at the launch.
And there's that great bit in the Wingspan documentary when he talks to his daughter about it and how they saw the picture of the two of them. You know, there's Linda Eastman talking to Beatle Paul, you know.
Yeah. You know. It's just so funny. Yeah. It's so funny. But yeah.
But that photo went out in the wires of them, you know, even before, right. Like, just from that first meeting, you know.
First meeting, and it was like, destiny. And in that documentary they talk about how they just like looked at each other and it was
right,
like, oh, you know, it was like magic, that moment, which is so romantic. But
but before we dig more into that, as we're recording this, you had just dropped your latest episode of She Loves You on Linda Eastman McCartney, you know. So just talk about a little bit about, you know, researching Linda, and, you know, was there anything in particular you found that really just, you know, you were glad to know or startled you or
Well, I guess I knew a lot about her previously just because I had, in years of just researching, like, I've just found out so much about her. And the Wingspan documentary is always great to go back to because it's so much info. But I think the interesting thing about Linda is she's always been the person that she is. And I think that's one of the best things about her. She was always, you know, this is me. And
what you see is what you get.
What you get, you know. Yeah. And that's sort of like what I've come across, you know, even like friends that were interviewed about her. They're just like, oh, she was a very just like, you know, this is who I am. And you're going to get me at face value. And, you know, even like when she was a kid, she was raised in this very like,
high society,
privileged high society life. Like her father, Lee Eastman, who we all know, Lee Eastman, he was a, you know, top entertainment lawyer, and he represented like famous painters and all this. So, you know, she came from this very privileged life, but she was so not that at all. You know, she was she was like, I like being outside. I like talking to animals. I like, you know, just like, I like being myself. And she was she was kind of like the black sheep of the family.
That, there you go. Like the rebel, the black sheep.
The rebel.
Even before, that association with Paul, she just was not going to conform to what her family was. And I think that's why one of the reasons why he, you know, took a liking to her.
Oh, definitely. And that's kind of in all the research I've done of, you know, for this episode and like my episode, it's just wonderful to see that Linda was always Linda, even from the beginning. And I think like my favorite story I've come across is like Mary said in a documentary somewhere where Linda was when she was a little girl, she would take like animals from the outside and bring them to like her bathroom and would like take care of them. And then I think one day her father found like a little like a lizard or something in the bathtub, and he was like, what is this, you know? And she's like, he's my lizard, you know. And she just, I mean, that's just who she was. And I think that to me, that's the best thing about researching her is knowing she was this great
person. And one of the things I think is so remarkable too is the not only obviously the influence that she had on Paul, but even I just watched it this morning. Paul, they Barnes and Noble's dropped an interview with a guy by the name James Dawn, a 1-hour interview, and he's talking about how Paul and Linda first got together, and she asked him about that farm that they had up in Scotland, and he was like, yeah, I bought it, but I never go up there. And she was like, let's go there. And she got excited about it. And then because she was excited about it, he was like, this is great. You know? So that's just her that's her influence. Right. Like now, and he says, he goes, oh, if I look at her eyes and I realize, I actually see why it's great. And that's just one of the cool things, well, the great things about her. You know, it's just something he wouldn't even, you know, here's Linda, who's like, oh, this is Scotland. It's picturesque. Let's go check it out. Because she's an American, so it's like Scotland, you know, let's go check. Where he's just like, oh, it's just some shack.
Just
I don't need to worry about it.
It's Scotland.
But
also, It's interesting because, like, he did buy that farm when he was still with Jane.
So Jane, correct?
I kind of get the feeling maybe he was like, I don't want to go to that place. Like, let's not go there. But no, you know, and I think Linda said, you know, like when we got to Scotland, it was a mess. You know, I had to redo the whole house, and I had to, you know, it was just a mess. He hadn't been there in a while, so you know, it's great. And you do, like you mentioned, it's wonderful the way she, like, she made him really humble, I think, and that's really important.
Good point. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know, so she's a divorced woman. She was originally married in 62. You know, Heather was born in 62 as well. Marriage doesn't last long. And at this point, let's talk about her as a photographer here for a second. As you know, with this, what? Go ahead.
I was just going to ask if Natalia, in her research, knows anything. And in all my years of reading the Beatles, I've never found much about Mel C. Do you have any? What about him?
The only thing I really know about him is that he was a very serious, like, intellectual type. Given he was he a geologist? Or I always forget what he was, but I think he was a geologist. I believe that he was a geologist. And Heather, you know, their daughter, has said that, you know, like, he wasn't really my father, but we got closer towards the end of his, like, kind of when he was about to pass away.
Right.
We got closer. And, you know, she said he's very, you know, sensible, a real thinker type. And, you know, from all accounts, that's just who he was. I don't really know much else about him other than that. Mm. The only thing I do know is, when doing my research, is Linda was not too fond of the fact that he always brought the classroom to the home. It was always like, you know, So I think in part that's why the marriage didn't last, because she wanted fun in her home, like, as well, you know, like, we can be intellectual, we can be fun at times. You know? And I think, you know, given she was young as well, you know, so.
Which is kind of ironic, because, you know, Paul does work at home as well. Yeah. You know, he does write music at home.
Yeah. Right.
Or songs or whatever.
Being a musician at home and playing songs is a little different than being, you know, a little more of a scholarly type.
Well, probably because she enjoyed music to begin with. So I can see how that would have its advantages over.
Definitely.
Yeah.
But from all accounts, we don't really know much about him. And that's sort of, like, I think the big mystery of life is we'll never really know much about him. But, you know, Heather said that they got much closer, and even though he wasn't her father, quote unquote, he was still, like, her biological father, and you know, just one of those.
And she herself keeps such a low profile.
Well, it had to have been really tough on her to lose him than what, 2 years after Heather, you know, and the way he died too, because it was a suicide.
It must have killed her. And that's, like, I don't know, poor Heather, you know, like, not really knowing her biological father for so long. And then when they're finally close, it's like, you know,
gone. Like, I'm sure she is probably so appreciative of the life that Paul gave her, but
absolutely,
she probably had her own demons, and realizing, like, my biological father is, I'm not really connected to him, but my adopted father is this megastar and who's treated me and taken care of me. You could see how that'd be a conflict for her, and it's
absolutely,
you know, sad in a way.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Like, I think maybe also the fact that Linda maybe didn't want to be a wife at that time. She didn't want to be, like, a housewife, because, you know, I don't know if you guys have seen, and it might have been in, like, a Paul McCartney biography, but there's a picture of Linda and, like, little baby Heather, and she's cooking in the kitchen. It was, I think, for, like, the Arizona newspaper or something, and it's like, Mrs. Joseph Melvin C. and their daughter Heather, as she makes, you know, her recipe of this. And it's, I feel like maybe she just didn't want that life, you know, she didn't want that, like, housewife, quote unquote, life, and just being married to a, you know, professor who probably didn't suit her much. So it's, you know, we won't really know about a lot about them. And that's sort of, like, one of those mysteries of the Beatle world, you know, but
cool. All right. On to, the photographer, Linda, and, you know, the amazing work that she was doing prior to her pretty much, you know, stopping and, you know, living the life as Mrs. McCartney. But some of the, you know, I had the Linda life and photos here, and then just some of the work is, you know, we talked about her first gig being, you know, on the yacht for, you know, taking pictures of the Stones, you know, and, you know, some good stuff here. And then let me just find this other one here. So, and obviously we talked about, you know, her taking photos of the Beatles, and then we got
I love that photo, the handshake photo.
The handshake one is incredible.
Love that one.
You know, You know, and we talked
about that's such a Linda photo too. You know what I mean? Like, right. I don't think any other photographer at that party would have ever gotten that.
No,
right. No, her, you know, perfect.
Yeah.
And then, it's great. And it just shows right. like she got, I think Linda's one of the few photographers that got them perfectly. I mean, I'd mm-hmm. say definitely in the top five. There are so many, but she's right. like,
I mean, right she's there. Taken so many great photos of Paul, obviously, but her photos of John are equally as awesome.
Oh my God.
Yes.
And there's Neil Young.
And that ended up being on an album cover for him. And I'm trying to find, okay,
I think go ahead, Tom.
Go ahead. No, I'm just saying here, though, the main big first accomplishment, I would say, then, is this photo of Eric Clapton.
Yep.
And then what happened? That ended up being on the cover of Rolling Stone, which she ended up being the first female photographer to have a cover on the cover of the Rolling Stone.
Right. You know. No, but big accomplishment. And it's, I think that just shows, you know, like, sometimes people... not that they forget, but they always just associate her as Mrs. Paul McCartney. And the reality is she had this full career before Paul, you know?
Totally.
Right. Yeah. And here's another great one too that I've always liked. I don't know if you can see it there.
Who is that? Is that John? John Paul.
John Paul.
That one. That's a great one. There's also, I think she took another great one of the two of them sitting down.
Yeah,
John's got his hand up. That one.
Yeah, that's it right there.
That one is so
perfect.
Good.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that photo.
Yeah.
And then,
like you mentioned, I think she captures John so well, and especially
right
during this like turbulent time. But yeah. Oh, see, yeah, that's perfect.
She captures the sweet part of John that only really Paul knows. Everybody thinks John in that late period is so caustic and bitter, and he was going through his own crap. But Linda captures the sweet soul person that John is in all those photos.
And the vulnerable side of him as well, because you know she mentioned that you guys probably know, there you go. See,
yeah, right there. Yeah.
So interesting. She mentioned that John was her favorite Beatle before she had even met Paul, and she says in an interview, like, you know, I thought he was the wisest person ever. Like, I thought, like, you know, if someone was gonna be, you know, somebody, it was John Lennon. You know, I knew that, but then I met him, and it was not at all what I thought. You know, that was the moment I realized people are not what they seem, and just because we have an idea of someone in our heads doesn't mean they really are, you know, because he was more he was more sullen and quiet, given it was a really bad period in his life, but he was more reserved and very, like, you know, not as funny, wise one.
This one is in the lyrics book. You can tell how worn down he looks, you know, which is a really nice one. And I got here's love this one too, another group shot, you know, in front of the EMI doors.
Yeah.
And then I think I got one more here, which might be arguably the most famous one right here.
Oh, him with little
the cover
Mary.
Shot. Yeah, the cover shot or the back shot of, which was supposed to be the cover shot, right? I mean, it was supposed to be.
Both of
them. Yeah. But then, you know, oops happened. But, but yeah, so obviously she could have continued being this world famous rock photographer.
Yeah.
And in a way she did, because then in 74, you know, she had another milestone. She was the first female to have a photo on the cover of Rolling Stone. And then she was also
on the cover herself.
First female on the cover herself taking the photo. This was quite amazing. Yeah.
It is amazing.
A huge deal.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody's ever done that since. I think that was the first and like only time that's ever happened, which is amazing.
Yeah. So, but you know, you do get photos. You know, there's also the Polaroid book that's out now that you can get a lot more photographs in there. Great photographs in there as well. But then you know, you will see photos from her from time to time. You know, on you know albums and stuff like that. If you open the gatefold. You know, so, I mean, it's just was really amazing what she was able to accomplish in such a short period of time.
Absolutely. And it's also, you know, like every musician that I've like heard do an interview or whatever, they all, you know, if they talk about Linda, it's, you know, she brought out the best in us, you know,
right.
she like she made us be calm when a lot of the times we didn't want to deal with photographers because they were so in your face. Right. And, you know, I just didn't want to be there. But with Linda, it was like everything changed. We could relax. We could have fun. Right. And that's her, that was always her approach to photography, was I don't like posing. I don't like studios. I don't like any of that. I love natural light. I love capturing people like in the moment. And
right.
I think that's, you know, that's why she gets the results she does, because, you know, like she was able to just let them relax. And, and then another thing, she would make you feel good about yourself. Like she would talk to these rock stars and just be like, what's up, man? Like, how you doing? Like, right. don't worry about, you know, like anything else. And that's why she was really good friends with like Jimi Hendrix.
Hendrix,
like, Burden. And, right. you know, like they just really, really liked her. And there's rumors that yes, she kind of dated some of them, but that's, you know, why not? Why not? She was young, you know?
And in a world now where everybody with their smartphones can take these kind of shots. No, but it's serious. It is serious. Like everybody can take these kind of candid shots that Linda liked to do. But Linda was doing it at a time when it was like, okay, this is, you know, she's just a camera and she's doing what everybody does now with selfies and taking candids. And there, you know, thousands of photos on our camera roll. But it was something that Linda was doing just because it was what she was.
Yeah.
Even though the technology wasn't there, she still was like, this is what I'm going to do.
Definitely. Definitely. And it's sort of like, she was so inspired by photographers that she like kind of grew up just knowing, like Dorothea Lange and like, you know, Henri Cartier-Bresson and like these great photographers that just captured like street life. And, you know, like Dorothea Lange captured the migrant workers in the Great Depression, you know? So she was very inspired by just life photography. And that's why her work is, you know, so good the way it is, really. Definitely.
Mm. Great. Let's talk about a few things, you know, that could have attracted Paul to mm-hmm. Heather. I mean, sorry, not Heather, but Linda. Yeah.
We'll get to that.
We'll get to that. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, looking at the things, I mean, she was like motherly, you know, which I think was really important for Paul. She had a child already, which I think attracted as well, because, you know, he had wanted to have children as well as, you know, and take that big step to really, you know, to adopt Heather, you know, and take on that responsibility. Absolutely. As well. Yeah. You know, was a big deal.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the, I think like when they first kind of met at that like Sergeant Pepper launch party, you know, she mentioned, oh, you know, I have a daughter and she's 4. And that was, right. you know, like, while he really liked her and, you know, he thought she was cute and all that. He thought, oh my gosh, she's a mom, you know, like that's, I don't think I'd ever been with
right.
someone that was so motherly in that way. And it was like a revelation.
Right.
And he was like, this is great. You know?
Right.
Cause he wanted kids, you know? Right. So definitely.
Right. Right. Free spirit. You know, we talked about, you know, adventurous, you know, Paul would talk about, you know, Linda would say, okay, let's go out and get lost. You know, I mean, that's like a lot where the song, The Two of Us, comes from, you know, it's just, you know, then hopping in the car with Martha, the dog in the back, and then just, you know, running off and getting lost, which is really
cool. Yeah. Too. She helped him relax is what I like to call it, because, you know, the stress of being a Beatle, you're never going to be relaxed, but, you know, she would say, like, I think Paul said in that one quote, he was like, he said, oh, I'm so sorry, Linda. I'm just so tired. And I'm like, you know, I'm so anxious about this. And she's like, it's allowed. You can be tired. Like,
Game changer.
Yeah. Like,
or,
allowed, you know, like,
or like when they wanted to get in the car, just get lost. And he's like, no, I want to know where we're going and what's the destination. Right. And no,
right.
It's okay.
It's okay. You can get lost, you know? And
And
I think that was very powerful to him, because he had so much expectations from so many different people. You know, John wanted him to write the songs, you know, he had to be in the Beatles. He had to do this, you know, records, you know? So, you know, when finally Linda was just like, it's okay. Don't worry about it. You know, it was changing for him, really. Yeah.
Right. You know, another one, as I lose my space here. Well, as a guy, she's obviously good looking. She's attractive, you know, great figure, you know, obviously that's, you know, one of the things that, you know, I'm sure attracted her, you know, Paul to her right away. You know, you said casual, you know, an artist, relaxed attitude, free spirit, you know, motherly. I mean, there's just so many things and great things too. It's just not like, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? I mean, it's just, it felt like it was like a real relationship from the moment. It didn't feel like it was going to be a fling.
No. And you know, I think at first Paul maybe he thought that's what it would be, but then, you know, as time went by, because right. you know, the reality is they met in 67, but they didn't see each other for like a whole year, you know,
right
end of 68. So the truth is maybe he at first thought, oh, it's just you know, this girl, but then as he mentioned, he kept thinking about her, and it was like he just couldn't get her out of his mind. And you know, I think when you're always thinking about something, that means
Shallow was the word I was looking for.
Yeah,
I
mean, it wasn't shallow
at all,
definitely,
you know.
And they kept in contact. I think people forget that, you know, like she sent him a little picture of Heather that she took of Heather sitting in front of a poster with Paul's face on it, actually. And like, she sent it to him and he kept it all this time. So, you know, she was always on his mind, and she would never be out of it, really. So, yeah.
Right. you know, and then obviously she's in a tough spot. The Beatle, you know, John announces he wants a divorce. Paul goes through this Great Depression, drinking, staying in bed all the time. I mean, in a way you could say, I mean, it was the marriage was put to a test really early, you know, because they just got married earlier that year.
And
what was it? May, right?
March.
March. Thank you. Yeah. March. Thank you. Yeah. March of 69.
The fact that she was American, that the people did not like that.
They hated her.
The Apple Scruffs did not like that.
Hated her. Everybody. Right.
You're marrying a Yank. Really? You know?
They hated her specifically as well for the way she dressed. They hated that she didn't put on makeup. They hated that she was like this freak, you know, like they were like, what is this? You know,
when one of the A's for Apple books from authors, Sarah Schmidt, she, you know, wrote about the Apple Scruffs. They would call her, they would say that she's hairier than Paul, you know, which is not really me. It's not really nice. It's terrible. Yeah. But these are things people say.
Yeah. And especially I think like Paul fans in particular, you know, they were so passionate about their love for Paul McCartney that it just, they couldn't believe it, you know? Right. And I think also what the perception was, is everybody thought he would marry Jane Asher. So they were so confused, you know, they just did not expect this at all. And John even said that, you know, he's like, we all thought he was going to marry Jane Asher. She came out of nowhere. You know? So just like one of those things. Yeah.
Right. And then to, you know, not have any musical experience at all, and then to join a band with your husband.
Yeah.
I mean, that takes some guts.
Yeah. I mean, she was hesitant, definitely, because I'm not a musician, Paul. Like, trust me, people don't want to see me up on stage. And he's like, no, you know, because he wanted her to be with him at all times. Right. You know,
I mean, he talks about how he brought her in to do the harmonies on Let It Be.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, because she was a girl and he can do it. And I mean, I have often wondered how much of that bringing Linda in was just him kind of just doing the same thing. Just, okay, John, you had her. Now I'm going to do the same thing. I'm doing the same thing.
Oh, I honestly have always thought that it was a mix of both. You know, he wanted Linda there with him, but at the same time,
like, okay, she's going to sit here on a bed on a speaker for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Linda's coming here too.
And that's sort of the thing I talk about actually on my episode. And I've said this like before, but you know, we don't talk about the parallels between John and Yoko and Linda and Paul. They're doing the same thing. It's just maybe in a different way. And people don't give Linda a lot of crap for it, but they give Yoko crap.
Linda did take, you know, a lot of crap at first, in the band.
Yes.
You know, obviously she took it on the chin. Well, you know, she knew she wasn't a good musician at first. She had to work hard to become a musician. And so when she was very brave, you know, I give her a lot of credit for stepping into that role.
Yoko only took the stage with John a handful of times, you know, at concerts and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, a live piece in Toronto, one-to-one concert. Right. Linda was a full-fledged member of a touring outfit. Yeah. So that and the especially the UK press was merciful, just merciless with their treatment of her.
Hated her. Yeah. And you know, she, like you said, she took it on the chin. She just, whatever, you know, it didn't affect her. I mean, given it probably did, you know, but at the same time.
But even when, and you've heard these interviews where she talks about it, she's like, you know what? They were right to criticize me because I didn't have any talent. I didn't have any experience. I didn't play before. So they were right in a way to criticize that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, she knew it, but Paul wanted her there, you know, and it's just like one of those things where you know, she was willing to do that because they just loved each other so much. You know, it comes down to that. And that's kind of what I say about John and Yoko too. It may be annoying, but you know, they loved each other at the end of the day, you know, that's what it comes down to, really.
Right.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, she was diagnosed with breast cancer in 95.
Yeah.
You know, we know that, she went through a lot of testing. I think at one point they thought that they got rid of it.
They were like, oh, you know, we're confident that things are going to go great. You know, I mean, you can't really say confident with any sort of medical diagnosis, but you know, they were fairly certain that, you know, they were going to come through this and it was going to be fine, but nope.
Yeah. I remember at the time when he was knighted and she wasn't there, that was a red flag where I'm like, okay, this is probably pretty, because that she wouldn't have missed that. You know,
and not at all.
He was knighted in 97, right? So, right before Flaming Pie. And I remember thinking, and it was already reported that she had cancer, but I remember missing that. I remember thinking, wow, okay, this is
serious.
This is not going to be, because she wouldn't have missed that, you know, of course.
Definitely. I can't even imagine. I mean, like, I just think about how, you know, you spend all your years with this person and you love them so much and you've created this great family and it's just like all of a sudden comes crashing down, you know, because this stupid sickness that we still can't fight for, you know.
All this money that's been dished into research for that, you know, terrible disease, and still,
you know. And she I remember when she passed away, and then the secrecy about it, where she actually passed away. Was it in California? Was it in Arizona?
Arizona, right.
You know, which I actually think it was it actually was Arizona, Tom, right?
I believe so. Yeah, I believe so. I mean, that's what I think I read in the Sorens book.
I think she did too. Yeah.
You know, and they said, I think Santa Barbara was the code word for where they would be, California, but it really wasn't Santa Barbara. And it's just, you know, God, you know, you read about her last few nights there and Paul's with her holding their hand and everything.
Right.
And then the whole family is kind of with her at the moment that it.
It's choking me up just thinking about it, actually.
That unfortunate day was April 17th of 98, and you know, he went through a good stretch. He talks about, you know, going through a year of mourning and you know, crying a lot, you know. So understandably, I mean, they were married 29 years, you know. And it, I remember hearing about them in the early MTV days, DJ Martha Quinn was introducing one of the early McCartney videos. Maybe it was Spies Like Us or something like that. And she said, you know, she talked about how, you know, Paul and Linda were one of the most successful rock marriages in history, you know, and it went. And it went for 29 years, and you would imagine imagine it would still be going now.
And listen, as he said, other than one enforced absence, they never spent any time apart. Other than one enforced absence, there.
What was that?
We know what that was.
Yeah, we know what that was. What was that? 9 days? 9 days?
Nine or 10 days? Ten.
But I mean, it just goes to show the love that they just had for each other, and I think, you know, like we've said before, but you know, Paul was such a family man that he was, you know, this was kind of what he always wanted. You know, he wanted his wife, his kids forever and ever and ever, you know.
And it's kind of, and Tom, I've shared this with Tom. It's kind of, we've talked about this when the Flaming Pie archive box came out last year. I kind of look at Paul as two Pauls, Linda and post Linda, because the family and the love and the kids and everything that went into that relationship. Post Linda, it's just, and I just can't look at him the same way musically, or it's totally different. It's a totally different person. It's still Paul McCartney, it's still a Beatle, but from going through that loss and that 30 years of a marriage and a life with her, you can't be the same person when you start over.
Huge transition, and the whole like having to move on, quote unquote. It's like, but how do you move on, you know, after you lost the love of your life?
Well,
I tell you how, you make a rock and roll album.
Make a rock and roll album, right?
You really
see that too. But then in this, you know, this transition, you know, a year later, he ends up meeting someone at this the Pride Dinner, of Britain Awards. Pride of Britain Awards in 1999, May 20th, 1999, to be exact. And I think he's sitting next to Piers Morgan, and he's asking who this particular person is on stage. And Piers says, well, that's Heather Mills. And she's kind of like a local, you know, B or C type celebrity, I guess you could say. Model.
See, until she met him.
Right. Yeah.
She was quote unquote an activist.
I mean, right. She did have some kind of charity thing going the time. After that award show, they did meet, and then Paul talked about, you know, giving to that charity as well. So I guess that kind of started the ball rolling a little bit.
There was an attraction there because
from what I was reading, this is kind of a little bit different. This was kind of more like a shallow attraction because he talks about how, you know, he found her physically attractive, you know, in a way that maybe he just didn't, he was kind of rushing into it. I've always felt that this kind of, though they married and, you know, in 2001, I think it was
two thousand two.
Thank you. It still felt like it was kind of rushed in a way.
And listen, we know his kids were on record. They were not in favor of this.
And that's the thing though, because Stella in one magazine did publicly say she you know, didn't mind Heather at all.
Yeah, but that was early on. And I think that was just more of a PR thing to support the family and everything.
Yeah.
But I think deep down, those children were not in
favor. I definitely know that they would. I think during that time, especially, you know, so soon after their mother's death, they tried to keep it, you know, play it nice for a little while.
Yeah,
you know?
Play it nice, support dad, but deep down, we are not.
There was definitely tension there, and you know it. I mean, I would not even doubt that the McCartney kids would give him, like, an intervention and be like, what are you doing? You know?
Right.
Yeah.
So soon, dad. Like, you cannot
quit it. But, exactly, you know. Right. So, you know, Heather and her sister Fiona, they write a song together called Voice. Paul adds vocals to that. I think that kind of adds a little bit more to the attraction. I think the first time that they're actually seen publicly together would be for her 32nd birthday, from my understanding.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it just goes from there, but before we get more into that, I mean, a little bit into her background. Okay, here's another case where she's married again. She was a model. Like you said, she was obviously in that bad car crash where she had to have her leg amputated. Yeah. And I think it was with a police officer or some kind of police accident.
But I think it also clears up a misconception too. A lot of people, because obviously the mind thing became her campaign, but she was actually just hit by a car. But I think a lot of people think she lost her leg by walking over a mine. That wasn't the case. She just was hit by.
No, yeah, it was just the car accident. Yeah,
it was a car accident. The adopt the minefield became a thing because of you know. But yeah, I know a lot of people think, oh, you know, she was blown up by a mine. Yeah. No, she was not.
No.
She was so brave. I'm like, it was a car accident. But yeah,
it was a car accident. Yeah. Right. But that's, again, one of the things where her and Paul collaborated on was this Adopt the Landmine campaign, which, again, what was that? What did that start? What did I write down when that started?
2003, 2004. They were also big. Do you remember their appearance on Larry King with the Seals? Do you remember that?
Yes.
Yeah. That was another big campaign. The seals were being slaughtered, I think, in Canada or something.
Right.
Seals were being slaughtered. Yeah, no, it's not funny.
Do you remember that, Natalia?
Yeah. Well, I've seen it now. I was too young to have seen it then, but yes. I've seen it now.
Yeah.
The other, what is it, slaughter this, or, you know, prevent the slaughter.
Well, she was a animal activist, just like Linda was. Again, something to even attract to Paul to her even more.
It's interesting because, you know, like she, I mean, I guess now in recent times, she's become a very, like, staunch activist, and she's like a vegan and all that. So it's interesting to see how they did have those similarities, her and Linda, but they just did it in completely different
personally ways.
Personally,
you know, in a way though, you know, Heather comes from a broken family, in a way. Her mom leaves the husband for another man. I think the husband ends up dying, I think, as well.
I don't remember the dad.
She had to go live with the mom and then the stepdad for a time. Yeah. And then goes into modeling, some nude modeling. You know, no big deal. I mean, people are free to do that if they want. And then you know, meeting like that again, it's just, you know, maybe I just wish Paul would have just, you know,
waited.
I don't know what you think. Waited. Yeah, waited. Yeah.
Waited. And I think, and, you know, I watched an interview with her and she even said, like, you know, we fell in love, but like we quickly realized it was a mistake on both parts. You know, it's just one of those things.
What do you make of all her claims post the divorce that he's not really the person he is? He's such a mean person. He's evil. He's this.
Bullshit, but like it's completely bullshit. I think she was hurt, so she's obviously like doing this to kind of and I feel bad for saying this. This is not a bashing because that's not like what I do, but she's trying to stay relevant. She's trying to stay relevant. So she of course is going to say whatever she feels, and especially when it comes to like Paul, she's gonna maybe take a jab, you know, even if it's like, you know, this, that. So I mean, unfortunately, I think she's bitter, and I think the best way to, like, you know, be relevant is to Paul, you know.
And he didn't have her sign a prenup. Damn you, Macca.
I know.
Should have done that.
I know.
With Nancy now, it doesn't matter because she's got her own money. It doesn't matter. I remember like when they got divorced with Heather, and it's just like, you know, and all the media stuff, and I remember like
I was too young to remember any of it, so I could imagine, you know, people that witnessed it must have been insane.
So Paul proposes in July of 2001. That's when they roughly start that Adopt a Minefield campaign bit. Paul got the engagement ring while on holiday in Jaipur, India, which apparently that's probably where Riding to Jaipur, the song from Driving Rain, came from. They married in June 11 of 2002. And Andy, you were talking about how it was this big, you know, before we signed on here. I mean, you're talking about how big this wedding was, and kind of big for two people getting married for the second time.
Yeah, that big castle in Ireland and star-studded, glitzy type thing. I remember seeing it on the cover of People magazine, and I'm like, this is not Paul McCartney. This is all her. This is not the guy that I love, who is like a down-to-earth guy who just likes loves his family. This is all her. This is all this.
Oh yeah, definitely. And like, I think Paul was so like blindly in love that he would go along with whatever she said. It's it's great to be in love, I'm assuming. I've never been in love. But like at the same time, like you can't just do things because like, oh, you know, I want this person, and you know, you said, it just wasn't him anymore. He changed because he was so into this, you know, woman that, you know,
and maybe it was a way of him to kind of get past the grief if he could just went headlong into that relationship. Yep.
That's always been my theory. I think he loved her because I don't think Paul would marry someone if he didn't love her. But I think the love was blinding because he was still grieving. He was still
Okay. And he's so sad and so grieving. He's like, okay, well, how do I? Well, here's this attractive babe. Let me dive head in here and throw caution to the wind, no matter what my kids say or anything.
They were together a lot. I mean, Andy, like you said, they did the Larry King Live, right? She was with him when he was in Moscow for that show. Excuse me. And she talked him into doing Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? You know?
Yes. Yes. I remember that. I mean, the only good thing she did.
Right. Anyways.
That was
so
funny.
But like you said, a statement from Paul. Here, being in love with her made me want to write songs. Well, you know, person before her made you write songs too.
Some damn good ones too.
Yeah, some damn good. Well, you know, and they talk about, you know, songs like, you know, See Your Sunshine, you know, was a good song for Memory Almost Full, you know, about her, you know, about her. And there's other songs out there as well. Heather,
you know what I think? Obviously, a really great one that was written too. I think it's called, it's from New. It's called Hell to Pay. I love that one because I've always thought that one was always a little bit of a dig that way too.
Right. It's going to be hell to pay. Right.
Yeah. She can go off on interviews, but he's gonna write about
right.
it. Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
So divorced. They separated. Sorry, in May of 2006. The divorce ended in May of 2008. She was awarded $16.5 million. I believe that's UK money, but she wanted $125 million. She had claimed that she knew exactly how much Paul was worth. So, but obviously, as we know, she didn't get, you know, that much.
No.
But,
And my favorite is her, like, I mean, I don't know her experiences, so I can't comment on that, right. but like the fact that she was like, he was abusive and would like,
right.
you know, like,
yes, yes. That's what I'm saying. He was right. abusive.
Where?
Really? Where? Paul McCartney was abusive. We've got 60 years of testimonies right. of people and family and friends to
and
say the opposite.
The irony of all of it is I think she like said something before, like, oh, Paul gets me breakfast in bed. And he's
exactly. And then I cook dinner. So we have this yeah. understanding, you know, and yeah. he's tidy. He cleans up and, you know, all of this, yeah. you know,
like, where is this right. abusive plot line coming
well,
from?
Well, and that's the thing. She said that he was stoned all the time, drunk all the time. Well, you know, he just lost a wife after 29 years. I can understand that. Plus, the things are going a little sour in their marriage. I think, you know, that could cause a little, you know, a little bit yeah. of wanting to, you know, drink and get stoned too.
Yeah. Yeah. A little way to, like, what is it? Let off steam.
Let off steam. What, there you go.
What's the song, Tom? Happy With You? I used to get happy with you.
I used to get stoned. Used to drink too much. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But these days you don't. You know why? Because he's happy with him.
Right. And he kicked her to the curb with her $16.5 million. So long. Get out of here.
Jesus. Yeah. Right.
Right.
Man, we should have gotten that prenup. Should have gotten that prenup. Is all I'm saying.
You don't. Right. You don't hear boo from her now.
No.
Not,
no.
Well, she did write a book.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
When did
yeah,
that
yeah,
she did thing come out?
Yeah.
I buy it and burn it.
I'll just highlight all the parts where I'm like, full. It's going to be like all highlighted.
Yeah.
When did the book come out?
I don't have it, so I don't know. But I don't know that.
Yeah,
I do know that she did write a book. And
it was kind of like a memoir, I guess, kind of like her whole life.
Right.
And, you know, all that.
Right.
So.
How
yeah,
I love the
16.5 million
pounds. Got it.
Right. But yeah, she was in the media a lot. I mean, she got scrutinized by the media a lot. I mean, she did sue and she did win money from the media as well. I think she did have a like legal battle against Piers Morgan as well.
Yeah, she like sued the Sun and like all these like
right.
big sort of like.
Well, they're always getting
yeah.
sued.
Yeah, exactly.
Ask Elton. Elton sued the Sun more times than you can shake a stick at it.
Wow, that's funny.
Yeah, I feel like they have a lawyer just for all like the lawsuits they get, like a specific
right.
lawyer just for celebrity lawsuits.
Yeah,
right. Funny thing is though, with this is, you know, Heather's born in 68. You know, right as Paul is like, I mean, he's at his height as a bachelor, probably, I would say,
yeah.
in 68. You know, we talked about that in the first episode of this series, you know, where Paul is just, I mean, he's wheeling and dealing. I mean, he's out there playboying it up. And
yep.
then, you know, here it is. And he's what, 25 at the time. And now, you know, he's with a woman, you know, 25, you know, her, you know, his junior, you know, so it's,
wow. yeah.
yeah.
I never really,
yeah.
I mean, like, I knew they had an age difference, but when you really think about
right.
it, 25
right.
years is a long time.
Yeah.
yeah.
And then we don't want to forget that, you know, they do have a child together, Beatrice, obviously.
Yeah.
Beatrice was born in October 2003. I did read that she did suffer a miscarriage in 2002. So
yeah, she did before
yeah, yeah,
before she,
yeah.
she did suffer a miscarriage, and that was, like, a
mm.
really big sort of moment in her life, I believe. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. So yeah, okay, that's Heather. you know, we could go on and on.
My Felicia.
And, you know, say, yeah.
yeah, but you know, we all know how it ended.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I will say though, I think the media scrutiny is hard on anyone, even if you were sort of like the quote unquote like not
mm-hmm.
the good one in all this. But you know, I
right.
think the media scrutiny, it's hard on anyone. So I guess I
right.
give her props for, like, not dealing with it. Or I guess, like, kind of ignoring it all these
mm-hmm.
years. Because I guess, I mean, she could still be talking about Paul. And I guess she stopped because,
right.
you know, what's the point?
Well, listen, you have a child together. I mean, you need to find a, you know, a happy medium between the two. You just can't keep, you know, when a child's involved, you just don't want, hey, listen, I mean, I was involved in a, you know, broken home. I know what it's like for the mom and dad to, you know, bicker back and forth all the time, you know.
I hear you. I know that. Yeah. I know that too.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's not fun, especially when you're a child, you know, it's not fun at all.
Not, you know, and that's why I'm like, oh, Paul and Linda, like the goal,
right. But speaking of a goal, we feel like now this relationship that he's in now is probably going to be it, right? We're talking about Nancy Shevel, here, born again, okay, another one that's a little younger than Paul, you know, born in 59. Oddly enough, or funny enough, you know, cousin to Barbara Walters, which I thought was kind of interesting. You know, she's also Jewish. She's also a breast cancer survivor. You know, so again, little similarities between her and Linda. She went to Arizona State University as well, like Linda. So
interesting. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, she knows. You know, she knows Paul and Linda from a previous, like, you know, like her is, you know, Heather as well. And Linda, she's married and divorced, you know, so, you know, that's can that's a continuation as well. You know, so, and they, you know, and she knows them with from her previous marriage from being in the Hamptons, you know, so I mean, obviously there's a lot going on there.
Yeah, no, I mean, they were friends before, and I think I think the best relationships can, you know, start from a friendship. So, you know, I think Paul was probably, like, at a point in his life where I don't even think he was looking, obviously, you know, honestly. He was just, it just happened, you know?
Whatever, just, which is kind of how it was with Linda.
Yeah, it was just this woman who had, he had known, but, you know, he was finally, you know, he finally started looking at her in a different way, and you know, it was like destiny, really, I think.
Right, exactly.
And she, she has money herself, which, you know, we need to say. She has money herself.
She's done very well for herself. I mean, she was a VP in a family-owned business as well. So she's done done well. She was married first to a lawyer, Bruce Blakeman. And, you know, obviously, we know that didn't last. Funny enough, you know, they started dating, I think, while they were separated. Nancy was separated from her husband, or, you know, and it was Barbara Walters that kind of played matchmaker.
Yeah, she played matchmaker, and she kept trying to get them, like, in the room together, which is like, hilarious, you know, because she knew that Paul was alone, and then, you know, like, she knew Nancy was, you know, kind of still sad, but, you know, she's like, eh, this might cheer them up together. And, you know, I don't know, maybe she didn't know it was going to be as serious as it was, but, you know, it turned out for the best in a lot of ways.
Very independent woman, very accomplished woman. I mean, she also was, she was on the board of the MTA in New York City.
Because her father, I believe her father was, like, the head of, like, this, like, the company or whatever it was. But, yeah, like, so she's kind of, like, an heiress, I guess.
In a way,
So she comes from money, but, you know, she didn't, from all accounts, people have said that she's a very private person. She never wanted any publicity. She likes music, but she's not, like, this person that's like, I'm going to be a musician. I'm going to do this. I'm, you know, she's so private about everything.
Paul's not going to ask her to be in a band.
Never. He would never do that. And she would say no. You know, she would be like, a lot of no, you know? But that, like, I think that's the best thing about her is she doesn't feel the need to put their relationship on display. And I respect her for that so much. So
absolutely.
You know, I'm so happy that he found her, you know, in the midst of all the craziness.
Right. Paul has said he fell in love with her while on the dance floor. I mean, it's, reading these last couple of articles, I mean, I didn't really realize that he was such a big dance person. myself. So, that's one of the ways, I guess, they go out, they go dancing. I guess him and Ringo and Barbara, they went out dancing not too long ago. So, hey, whatever you got to do to keep that flame going, you know, if you're going dancing's it, go ahead and dance. You know, engaged on October 9th of 2011, you know, big day there, October 9th, married, same place that Paul and Linda got married, which.
And was it on John's birthday? Correct me if I'm wrong. Or
no, I think the engagement was.
The engagement was? Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But, you know,
Marylebone.
Marylebone. It's just like, okay, does Paul bring that up? Does Nancy bring that up? I mean, how does that, you know, enter the picture? Hey, do you mind if we get married at here? You know,
I get the feeling she brought it up. She probably thought, you know, like a little tribute to Linda because, you know, they were all friends. So
right.
You know, she probably thought, you know.
No, like, they, I'm sorry, Tom. They were married on October 9th.
Oh, okay. Then what I got was wrong. Okay. Thank you for that. Cool.
Yeah.
I thought
yeah.
they were engaged on October 9th, but thank you. Yes.
Married on the 9th of October. Yeah.
On John's birthday, which is really significant. John's
birthday.
As well.
Right.
Again, yes. These things are coincidences, people. Like,
right.
This
no, not. No. No, I mean, and again, and you see these two together a lot. You know,
yes.
I mean, there was that rally, that gun rally in New York. Was
yep.
it early? Was it last year or
last
a couple years
year.
Ago?
It might have been yeah. 2019, I think. Maybe.
Yeah, pre-COVID. They're not, pre-COVID. Yeah, pre-COVID. And, you know, they're talking about, you know, Paul's talking about how he lost his friend to
a couple
you know,
blocks away.
Yeah, a couple blocks away. Yeah, yeah you know, so yeah. you see them in pictures in the Hamptons, vacationing all the time, you know, on boats, having a great time. So, yeah, I absolutely think that this one is.
Yeah, I mean,
going to last.
He's in the twilight of his years here, and right. He's very content and happy. And you could see that when you watch any interview with him. I mean, even the one I watched this morning of the Barnes & Noble one on the book, he's just so relaxed, so at peace, so happy and content, which is what anybody wants for him. That's all everybody
right.
wants.
Yeah. I it's so great to, like, know that, you know, after the craziness of the Mills debacle, it's like, you know, he found someone who, like I say, he didn't expect. I really believe that. And then it just, you know.
Because
like,
he's like, he just looks the way he's supposed to. Like,
yeah.
he's older. He's almost 80. He's letting the gray come. He's letting
right.
his beard show. Like, when he was with yeah. her, when he was with the aforementioned nut job, he
right.
had to, like, you know, he was she like his hair was all dyed. It was just it didn't look.
He had to be young again.
Right.
Like,
yes.
But coming out of like after Flaming Pie, and like aging gracefully, and his hair was like going gray then, and then
yeah.
to like look like to try to make yourself look like you're 25 and 30 when you're 64.
It doesn't work.
Yeah.
it doesn't
no.
work.
No. no. So you look at him now, and it's like he's the way he's supposed to be. And if
yeah.
Nancy is a, you know, has a lot to do with that, then good for her. Right?
Yeah. She's, I think she's like a very calming influence on, you know, the,
right.
on Paul McCartney now. So it's wonderful to see. And I love My Valentine. I love that song. I think it's such a beautiful song that
yeah.
he wrote for her, you know, it's just so
well,
sweet, you know?
It is sweet. Unfortunately, that's the bathroom song for his shows.
But it's sweet.
Right. So do you plan on doing a show on Heather on your
I will, because we're talking about everybody that was in
yeah.
you know, these
Luck,
boys' lives.
Talia, on that one. How are you gonna keep yourself fair and balanced on that?
I try, you know, that was sort of my Yoko episode was another one I had to figure out what I was going to really say. And then I realized, like, you know, I think my show, it's truly about highlighting these women's experiences. And, you know, while they were with these men, it's really about them as well.
Right.
You know? So I think I will try to obviously see the good in Heather, even if I know there
right.
is a lot of shit on her, because there is.
Right.
But I'm going to try and just, you know, like, I'll talk about her activism, and I will definitely, like, make a point that, you know, she does donate a lot of money, and she does, like, help these causes. But I'm going to keep it honest, though, you know, and say that,
absolutely.
You know, throughout
yeah, you
it
have
all,
to.
There
right.
was this, you know, like, big problem with money that it seems that, you know, like she just wanted more and more. And
yeah,
you know, I'm gonna definitely talk about that, because, you know, Andy, you brought up such good points, the fact that Paul was just not himself a lot of the time with, you know, when he was with her, and that's something that I definitely will talk about, but I'll keep it, you know, civil as
You'll
much
keep
as
it
I can,
civil.
Obviously.
Keep it
yeah.
civil.
But I will try to highlight the good things she's did, because
there
are good things, even if, you know, crazy.
There's,
but,
hey, and you know what? To say what you want about that relationship, that there's a child out of it, and there's a okay,
right.
and there's a child out of that relationship, and one that, you know, that's something that they have to, both of them have to live with, and to
yeah.
make sure that the child is taken care of, no matter
Absolutely.
How good or bad that relationship ended. I mean, there's a child to be looked after now,
yeah.
and that's
and,
the
know,
end of the game. Yeah,
that's life. You know, you go through experiences. You know, you kind of learn lessons out of all of it. So I think Paul is the wiser for it. You know, because he knows
yep.
now. Like, you know, I'm really content.
There was a photo that came out of Paul right around the release of McCartney 3 where you saw an image behind him and it looked like it was Heather Mills. I don't know if you remember this, Andy, or not.
Yes.
Yes. So, you know, you would imagine with that photo that there's some kind of, you know, common ground now. There's some kind of happy medium to where can actually, you know, be in the same room together now, you know.
I mean, I definitely think in private is a definitely a different relationship to what, you know, probably the public knows in an interview. And, you know, she is Beatrice's mother. So it's sort of that, you know, she's always going to be Beatrice's mother and they're always going to have a relationship, even if it's not a married one, right? You know?
So what else you got coming up with your show? She Loves You. Tell us a little bit more about that.
I got an interview with Patricia Gate. I can never say her name, but Patricia Stanman, who wrote Diary of a Beatlemaniac, which is a great book. And it's sort of her experiences as a young Beatles fan in the 60s and what it's like to like come up with schemes to meet them and all that. So I have her on the podcast and I'm going to put up that episode on Monday, actually. So it should be up.
Okay.
But the next woman I got is, I'm trying to think, Barbara. I'm going to talk about Barbara. So
that's great. Okay.
Because I don't really know a lot about her. She's kind of the one girl I don't know much about. So I'm going to do Barbara. And then from then on, I'm going to do the girlfriends. So we're going to start with, like, you know, John's first girlfriend, you know, and then go on from there. And we'll kind of, and more interviews in between, you know, with like interesting people that I, you know,
excellent.
And all that. So, you know, we're just going to take it. And then I think after the girlfriends, I'll do like, the alleged affairs.
The flings.
Yeah, the flings. Because John's got a lot of them. So
you have a lot to draw from. I mean, there is, you know, 60 years or so of these women that, you know, some played bigger roles than others, but there's stuff to talk about.
Absolutely. And even, you know, like then I'll go on to the friends, you know, like Astrid and like really important women.
Good
and,
person like, right there to do a show on. Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, that was kind of something I was thinking about also. I'm like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do when I run out of women? But there's so many to talk about. I'm not going to run out.
Don't worry about that. You've got a couple years still.
And, you know, like I'll talk about, like, you know, with Patricia's interview, like I'll talk about fans because, you know, those women are important, even though there were male fans. Of course, there are male fans. But, you know, I think like the women experience of being a Beatles fan, it was so important to the 60s, particularly with like, because, you know, we talked about this in the episode, and if you hear it, you'll hear what we say, but we talk about how the Beatles really were like the first kind of moment of women's liberation in that time. You know, it was the idea that, you know, these girls could finally, you know, wear miniskirts and, you know, the Beatles, and their parents would get mad, but they wouldn't care, you know. So it's topics like that that we'll definitely cover, and it's gonna be great.
And plus you got Beatle daughters to talk about as well.
That will kind of come afterwards as well.
You have plenty.
You're good.
And the mothers.
That could be a whole other thing. The mothers. Oh man.
Yeah.
That could be a whole other series.
Everybody. And you know, like I'll talk about sisters and all that too. You know, so I've got a lot.
Wow. Yeah. It's kind of a little overwhelming when you think about it. You
know,
put it into a bigger picture.
It is.
You know, it's just like, do I have enough time for all of this?
I'm really so much fun though. So it's like, I love doing it. So it's, and it's,
that's what I love hearing. Yeah. I love hearing how much fun you're having doing this, because I'm kind of seeing you as when I first started doing this back in 2016, how much it was just, you know, just fun doing it. And it still is fun. And I hope it still remains fun for you, you know, years to come. I mean, there's going to be some overwhelming moments here and there, but but
I think I'm going to do though is, like, I don't think I'll do it on each mother. I'll kind of do a whole episode about mothers, you know, to kind it's kind of hard, I think, to do it specifically on each of them, but I think I'll do all of the mothers, you know. I'll definitely have more info on more than others, but
because I mean, obviously there's a lot more about John's mom than say George's mom, you know, or Ringo's mom. So
absolutely. definitely. Mm,
absolutely. Well, thank you very much for this. I just had a great time talking with you. I mean, you're an inspiration. I'm just so glad there's more women coming into these, you know, this podcasting world as well. It's definitely a great welcome to see, you know, the younger people, you know, too. So, you know, carrying that torch in a way, because, you know, we got the generation before us, you know, and us, and then now, you know, kind of like you and Ethan and some of the younger ones out there, you know, they're going to continue the torch going. So I'm looking forward to everything that you're going to be doing in the future. And I love your show. It's great. And please listen, how can they find your show?
Okay. So right now I'm currently on Spotify. If any of you have Spotify, but I'm also on Apple Podcasts. I'm trying to figure out how I can get to more platforms. And that's kind of like all, as you know, if something changes, I will let everybody know. But for now, that's sort of where I am, Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And I'm trying to see if I could maybe do like YouTube as well, just to upload them, the audio, you know, video.
Yes.
Because I know people can't, you know, access Spotify, right, and some people don't have Apple Podcasts.
Right.
So, you know, maybe I'm trying to kind of figure out how that's going to work. But for now, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. I have an Instagram called She Loves You Podcast, and that's kind of where I post updates. And, you know, if any of your guests maybe want to be like guests on my podcast, that'd be great, you know, as well. So, you know, we'll see. And yeah, so you can find me all on that. And yeah.
Cool. Excellent. And you also got the Cynthia Lennon Instagram.
Yes, I also run Cynthia Lennon Daily, which is a fan page dedicated to the memory of Cynthia Lennon, her legacy, her life with, you know, John, as well as just like her art in general. She, if y'all don't know, she's my favorite Beatle girl. I've said this millions of times everywhere, but you know, for people that don't know, she's my favorite.
You and Jude Kessler.
Oh, I love you so much. I met her at the fest in 2019, and she signed my book, and she's like, thanks. She's so funny, but she was like, thanks for everything you do for Cynthia. Oh, and John.
Nice.
She's great. But yes, I do run Cynthia Lennon Daily, and yeah, it's just a page that, because, you know, I think she was an incredible lady, and she needs to be talked about more, and especially in Beatles history, I always say, when it comes to it, just because people tend to forget about her a lot. So I really kind of wanted that page to just remember her by, and you know, yeah. So I run that as well, if y'all want to follow that on Instagram. Right.
Great. Yeah. Excellent. Thank you. Andy, anything you want to contribute before we sign off?
No, just thanks again for episode, Natalia, hearing the interesting fresh perspectives, especially younger ones. And just to tackle a subject area that is grossly overlooked, and, good on you for doing that. And
thank you.
Appreciate that. And that's about it.
All right. Well,
thank you so much.
So much fun this was. Absolutely. You can find us, Two Legs, at Twitter, Facebook, Instagram at Two Legs Podcast. Email us at twolegspodcast@gmail.com. There's the website, twolegspodcast.com. Check us out on our YouTube channel, where you're going to see our bright, smiley faces right now, and talking about everything that we love, you know, this person that we love so much, Paul McCartney. So it's Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. That's the video aspect of it. The audio aspect of it, where Andy got us, you know, what it was, Spotify, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Apple, Amazon, you name it, we're there. So
Pandora.
Pandora. Thank you. Just type in Two Legs Podcast, and I'm sure you'll find us somewhere. So Andy, thanks again for all that you do. Natalia, you got a great podcasting career in front of you. I'm looking forward to more. And so for Andy, Natalia, I'm Tom, and as always, everybody out there, have a great day and a beautiful night. Take care, everyone.
Bye.